Hi, this is Women Who Travel, a podcast from Condé Nast Traveler that digs deep into the realities of traveling as a woman today and celebrates why we'll never stay home. I'm Lale Arikoglu, and with me, as always, is my co-host Meredith Carey.
Hello, everyone.
And joining us today is Jen Rubio, co-founder of Away Luggage, which I will very biasedly say is a traveler favorite. Founded in 2015, the brand has become the face of, I would say, millennial travel. There are celebrity collaborations, pop-up stores, hundreds of thousands of suitcases have been sold, and $50 million were raised in the latest round of funding for the company. It goes without saying that Jen is one of the women shaping the travel landscape today, and we are so thrilled to have her here. Hello, Jen.
Hi, it's so good to be here. You know, every time someone does one of those intros, it's like the only time I take a step back and think about it. I'm like, oh yeah, we did all of
we
that.
We did this thing. It's so crazy.
This was all me. And so you co-founded Away with Steph Corey. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'd love to hear like a little bit of the origin story before we kind of get into everything else. How did the idea come to you? Did you see like a gap in the market that made you like, were you frustrated with something and you were like, we want to fix this?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think a lot of people see what we've been able to do with the help of our team and think, you know, they must have always wanted to be founders, or like, we must have had this passionate dream to be in the luggage space, and neither of those things are true. I was living in London at the time, and I was actually trying to figure out a way to stay there, but my visa had expired. And Steph was in business school, and my luggage broke, and I was trying to find a good replacement. And everything out there was either super expensive, but like pretty, or more affordable, but you knew it would break. And there's just nothing in the market. I mean, for me, I don't know about you guys, my friends are like the big recommenders, and they have suggestions for everything. And when I asked people what luggage I should buy, everyone's like, I don't know, just don't get mine. And I thought that was, I thought it was really telling that, you know, travel is something that everyone does, whether it's for work or for fun. And your luggage is something you take with you on every trip. And until we started Away, it really just felt like an afterthought. So we kind of just explored that gap in the market. And now 3.5 years later, we have Away.
That's too funny, because I actually, when I started here, I was still using the luggage that I had gotten as a present in the eighth grade, that is brown with blue polka dots. Very easy to find on the conveyor belt, but not exactly like traveler appropriate. So I would come into the office before trips with my hiking backpack, because I was like more comfortable walking into this building with a full hiking, like fully stuffed hiking backpack, than I was bringing in my luggage, to the point where my boss was like, I have an extra Away suitcase. Please take this, because you need to stop coming in the office.
But that's exactly it, right? Yeah. Like, I think everyone I talk to, and these are people who will plan, you know, every trip with like a million restaurant recommendations. They'll plan every outfit. They'll like switch hotels so that they can try different ones that they've seen on Instagram. And they'll show up on the trip and it's like a duffel bag that they found in their mom's basement, or a bag that was given to them on an internship as like part of the swag. And I just thought that was really interesting, how this was just a market that really didn't have the brand or design or kind of like storytelling that it really deserved.
I feel like every suitcase I had before my Away bag, my parents had either bought for me or I had taken off my parents. Like, I'd never actually bought a suitcase for myself. As like a grown adult woman that like works for a travel magazine, I'd never bought a suitcase. It was a real eye-opening moment for me, where I was like, wait, this is actually like a nice thing to own, and it looks really pretty, and like I feel good using it.
Yeah, totally. It's really interesting to us to think about how many, you know, we've sold over 500,000 suitcases, and we're always trying to figure out how many of those people would just have not bought a suitcase at all. Like, would just keep using whatever hand-me-down or whatever random thing they were given. So it's exciting to think about how we're actually not just taking market share, but expanding the market.
And so at the beginning, right when you started out, because you have this idea and you're like, okay, we want to fix this thing. What then? What was the next step?
I don't know, I kind of blacked out. no, it was actually really interesting, because I think we were in a very lucky position where I think a lot of times people come up with an idea and they have, you know, they find someone to partner with, and and a lot of times like you're in a job and you have to think about like, is it worth quitting my job to pursue this idea, to be like a founder, an entrepreneur? And I had just wrapped up my last job in London. Steph was in business school. So we were both kind of in this very like free flowing, oh, let's just look into it. Let's see what happens. And before we knew it, we were at a luggage trade show in Vegas, pretending to be luggage buyers and just like seeing what was up and how much things cost. And then that, you know, we'd like did a little bit more research. We talked to some people. Then all of a sudden we were in China in between, you know, Steph's finals looking for factories. And this whole time we were just like, let's just see. And then it started to get more real when we raised money. We raised our first seed round, which was $2.5 million. And we're like, okay, well, this is like a real business now. We're like hiring designers. We're making prototypes. Like we signed on with a factory. We did all of these things. But I think because we didn't really have to make that yes or no decision overnight, it really like let us build up a passion for this thing and realize that we were the team to do this and that we were excited to do it.
In those early stages of asking for funding and kind of working through the like creative process, what do you feel like were the biggest challenges as a team of two women in an industry that, you know, the travel industry is sometimes primarily headed up by men in suits?
Yeah, well, let me tell you, that luggage trade show in Vegas was, we were the youngest people there by at least 40 years, and everyone was in suits. So I think it is a very traditional market. I think the incumbents are very traditional. Not a lot has happened in the luggage industry. I mean, I think in the last few years, there's been a lot of activity, but I think one of the best and worst things about Steph and me is that we were a little bit oblivious to that stuff, and maybe purposely so, but I think we were very much, we really just thought we could do it. And every problem that came our way, we're just like, okay, how do we fix it? Or this is solvable. You know, when we were fundraising, everyone says like getting a no is the hardest part. Like the second an investor told us no, we were like, okay, cool, on to the next one. And that the no's for us were way better than the people who were like dragging their feet and saying they might invest and things like that. So I think, you know, we always had it in our heads that we were gonna do it. Even now, even with all the success so far, there's roadblocks every single day and we're just always problem solving. So I think that mentality and that kind of confidence has been really helpful. And I think with a lot of women starting businesses, it is that confidence that's the key piece, because I think it's hard for everyone. It's not just hard for women. It's hard for men too. And it's about that mentality of like solving the problems that come your way.
I feel like when we talk about these roadblocks, the biggest one that comes to my mind is this like transition we're having in and out of smart luggage right now. So, you know, with all of the changes that airlines have been making and the decisions that have been made with lithium batteries and things like that, you know, you guys switched over and have pop-outs now and are changing over the original like OG suitcases are now being flipped to that pop-out battery system. But how are you guys like staying on top of all that and staying ahead of people that have failed because they couldn't keep up with these changes that were a key part of how they started out as a design?
Yeah, and to just add a little more context to that for people who aren't familiar with it, it's our carry-on sizes have a built-in battery that you can remove. And the older models, you could remove it from the inside, but you needed a screwdriver. And actually, pretty early on, before all the airline changes, we had actually looked at that design and said, there has to be a better way to do this, and started developing the design with the pop-out battery from the outside. And also it allows people to take the battery with them to their seat, and it's just a better design. So we actually rolled that out right before all of the airlines started saying, hey, you have to take out your lithium ion batteries before you board. And so to a lot of people, it looked like it was just like an overnight change. All of a sudden, the bags that we were selling had this pop-out battery, but it was something that we had been working on for a while. I think the timing actually just worked for us. That wasn't fun, but we also didn't see it as a roadblock. We were like, okay, this is this thing where we can't actually control what the airline regulations are. We have really good relationships with all the airlines. We were in constant contact with them, but they're so siloed, they're so big, like no one knows what's going on, that we were like, the best thing we can do is roll out this new product that we've been working on and make it right for the first customers who really believed in us and really bought the product ahead of all of this. And for us, you know, that's something that we invested time and resources into, like that cost money. But for us, we're like, these people have supported us since the beginning. They believed in our product. We made an improvement to it. So we also want to give them that improvement. And I think for us, it's about that customer relationship and using that, what could have been a disaster and like a total crisis for us, and using that to show our customers how much we care about them. There's nothing we could have done to change the regulations. And even when they did kind of change to be more lax and more in our favor, they weren't enforced the same on every flight. There's just like a ton of issues there. So we're just big believers in controlling what we can control. And for that, that's our interactions with our customer.
And so when you first had your kind of first prototypes, did the two of you like travel around and fly with them? And like, what were those first trips with the bags like?
We got a lot of parts prototypes. So we would spend, we used to work in a WeWork, and we would spend a lot of time with like wheel prototypes, just like wheeling it across the desk. And we're like, there has to be a better way.
I like that also in a WeWork, it's really public. With yeah.
We're like, what are they doing? We're like out by the keg, just like wheeling something and playing with handles. So when you're doing something with a lot of components like luggage, you're Frankensteining a lot of things together. And just with timelines, we were like, really wanted to get it out, they would put our wheels on a bag that was definitely not ours, just like whatever they had laying around, just so we could see how it works. So we did a lot piece by piece, but I remember the very first piece of luggage. We had our, you know, whatever other brand luggage that we still traveled with because we didn't make our own yet. And when we got our first prototypes and we had to carry them back because they were like, we wanted to use them for pitching and for press and for investors. So we couldn't actually travel with like the first full babies. And I remember just boarding the planes and we each like carried one. We like didn't let it touch the ground. It was like wrapped in plastic, which was a little bit absurd. I mean, we had tested a lot of different ones before that, but I remember the first perfect ones we had to hold like they were actual children, and they tried to make us check it and I lost it. I was like, you have no idea, which sounds really sketchy now, but
they must have been puzzled.
Exactly.
I think it's crazy to look at in the short amount of time that you guys have been in existence. There's just like how many pieces you guys have right now. I was babysitting the other day and the kid that I was babysitting had like the little, her like pint sized version of the suitcase that she was playing with as a 2-year-old.
Which one was it? Was it a Minion?
It was not a Minion. It was just a like very chic gray colored mini suitcase.
And by the way, we did that for the parents. You know how all kids' suitcases have like cartoons and characters and stuff all over them? Like the inside of the kids' suitcase is really fun, but we were like, the people who are going to be buying this don't want their kids to have like cartoon bags. So it's really cute to see all these like families with their matching away bags.
And you see them in airports.
Yeah.
I've seen them.
How does it feel when you travel now? Because Lale and I have talked about this, how like we'll go to the airport and be like, spotted, 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 spotted. We all have the same bag, but they're all different colors. This is great.
Different monograms.
Exactly. How do you feel traveling now and seeing what you created out in the world?
It's the best feeling. It's my favorite thing. I'm probably on 2 or 3 flights a week. So I basically live at the airport. And it's actually been fun because I remember, so there hasn't been a single trip to the airport since we launched the company where I haven't seen an away bag, which is really crazy. Like the first time I went to the airport after shipping our first suitcase, and it was someone I knew, so it was fine. But it still counts.
Absolutely.
And I started doing this thing. I used to do this thing on my Insta stories where I would just like take pictures of the bags in the airport. And then it started to get really creepy because there were a lot. I was like, I can't keep doing this. Also, like people are like, who's that weird girl taking a picture of me? But it's so rewarding. And I think, you know, I don't actually do this much anymore. Before, I used to have time before my flight to talk to people and like that in-person feedback and seeing how it really just makes people's like trips easier is so rewarding. But I think also, it's also really inspiring because if our goal is to have every single person in an airport with like an away travel uniform, which is like the suitcase, like the bag that you put on top of it, and all the accessories inside it, how do we make it so that you don't feel like you have the same suitcase as everyone. So I think as we start thinking about the future, it's like, how do we customize? How do we personalize things? What are other products we can launch to complement that uniform?
I love it.
You said before you founded it, you were living in London. And so you'd obviously done some traveling before. Kind of what were your like earliest travel experiences? And then like, how did you get from like there to where you are now?
God, my earliest travel experiences. I was really lucky that I grew up with a dad who like really instilled this love of travel in me. And it wasn't actually like that with my whole family. Like my mom and my siblings are very much homebodies, and now they're traveling a lot more, which is fun and exciting. But I think, you know, some of my earliest memories, okay, not my earliest memories, but some of like the most prominent memories where I was like, wow, travel is like a really crazy thing, is like, I remember, and this was later in life. So I was in college and I was going through a breakup. And I remember just being like, I would do anything to not, like, to just be away from this right now. And then I was like, wait, I can do something. And I just booked a flight. And like 6 hours later, I was in St. Martin, like on the beach, yes, by myself. And it was it was amazing. And it was this, and it was, you know, I traveled a ton before then. I think by then I'd been to like 30 or 40 countries. And I was really fortunate to have had those experiences. But I think just being able to be like, you know, if you plan it, or if you like have the means, you can. And I actually did not have the means. I was like eating ramen, and I like charged, like I found a cheap ticket on JetBlue and charged it on my credit card, and I like spent a long time paying it off. But I was just like, you can just be anywhere, and it can totally change your perspective on things. And I went from feeling like I'm never getting out of bed, I'm never getting over this breakup, like I'm so broken, to being on a beach in a totally different part of the world, and like I could do anything. And that was just like a really empowering thing. And I think one of the things that my dad taught me when I was growing up is like, you know how a lot of people's parents say, you can be anything you want to be. My dad would always tell me, you can go anywhere you want. And that didn't mean, like, a lot of times it was like saving up my allowance or doing like a ton of chores to be able to like pay for, or he would like make me contribute to trips and stuff. But it really just resonated with me. And actually, one of my big goals in life was to go to all 7 continents. And in 2011, I wanted to go to Antarctica. It was the last one. And my dad had actually passed away the year before, and we were supposed to go together. And my mom was like, yeah, that's really sweet, but I'm not paying for it. But I was working at a startup at the time. I'd like saved up every single penny. And then I remember being like in Antarctica in a kayak looking at like glaciers and icebergs and being like, I can't believe I'm here. Like this was it's one of those things that people are like, why would you go there? How do you do it? And it just made me realize that everywhere truly is accessible. And I think that's what we want people to feel like. We want away customers to feel empowered to be able to go anywhere.
Do you feel like the way that you traveled before you started Away is different than how you travel now? Because you're traveling so often now compared to, I imagine, probably like more work, less trips.
Yeah.
less
Antarctica trips.
Yeah.
yeah, it's so different. So I think before, even, you know, when I was studying abroad and I would try to go to a new place, I actually got into that kind of weird spiral of like trying to collect passport stamps and like trying to tell everyone all the places I was in. It was like a totally different mindset. I felt like I was checking things off a list, and those experiences were amazing, but it's just so different from the kind of travel I do now, which is, you know, investor meetings and press trips and store openings and like factory visits. And those are kind of the same places over and over. And I actually realized, I keep track of all the flights I've been on this year. I've been on over 100 already, and it's July. But I remember like 60 flights in, I realized I hadn't gone anywhere new. And before, that was my whole thing. I like never repeated places. And I think it's given me a lot of perspective on not every trip is going to be a once in a lifetime destination. Like the amount of times, like, you know, I go through Heathrow security, I basically live there. But how do we make travel easier no matter what type of trip you're going on? And I think for me, I've come up with a lot of little rituals, and I bring a lot of things to make myself feel at home. So I'm actually very rarely on vacation, but you know, every trip I take, even if it's just back and forth to LA every other week, I've gotten into the habit of things where it feels really comfortable and I feel really good about it.
What are some of those rituals?
Okay, so I'm always like begging for upgrades, but even when I don't get them, I'm like, how comfortable can I be in this seat? So I'm a big fan of in-flight facials. And I used to get really embarrassed, but I'm like, you know what? I'm never going to see these people again, except for when I do.
It's also like, think how terribly some people behave on the plane.
Yeah,
like, not, you just not, have a sheet mask on.
Yeah, like, really, I'm not barefoot. I'm not annoying. I'm just like quietly in my cocoon with a sheet mask. But I have this whole like skincare. I like, before I get on any plane, I take off all my makeup. I like put on all my hand sanitizer. I have everything in a bag. We make an everywhere bag. It sits on top of your suitcase. I just put that under the seat in front of me. I will never be one of those people like gets up and gets their suitcase out in the middle of a flight and is like digging through it in the aisle. So I'm like very prepared. Like everything I need for the flight is in this little bag. Like I have snacks and people are like, well, there's food on planes. Well, one, it's disgusting. And two, it's like you're not getting served that food if you're stuck on the tarmac for 3 hours, which like weirdly happens to me a lot. So I think it's just little things like that, like being really comfortable. Like I have a really cozy pair of like cashmere travel socks that I just put them on and I'm just like in my own like little spa bubble, even if I'm in like seat 50E. So it's things like that. Like when I stay in a lot of hotels, I bring a sound machine because there's a lot of noises in hotels. And I think that I have a sound machine at home. So it's just like, what do I do at home that I can bring with me? Even the most minor thing, like always having all the toiletries I use at home are the ones that I bring with me. I'm not going to be like, I used to be like, oh, well, hotels have shampoo. And like the last thing you need when you're like going from meeting to meeting is being like, what is in my hair? Like, I feel really weird. And it's just, for me, the name of the game is just about being as comfortable as you can, even when you're not home.
And so when you're traveling to all these kind of cities and hubs, and it's for work, and when you're on a work trip, like it is hard to like see much of a place. How do you find kind of like moments to just like be there? And just, even if it's just for like an hour, like to just experience a slice of that place?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I'm really lucky where the places I go for work are places that I've been to a lot and also places where I've used to live. So London, LA, I never lived in Hong Kong, but I have a lot of friends there. So it's like, it's nice to know that if I have a free afternoon or something, I can just pop in and do something. But actually just crowdsourcing, like I think this is like the one thing left that Facebook is good for. You can just literally ask, if I have 1 hour in this place, what could it be? I've learned to never ask, hey, I'm going to Atlanta. Like, what are your recommendations? Because everyone will give you everything. And I think if you ask people, like, if you tell people, I only have 1 hour, what should I do? You get some really interesting answers that way. And that's what I try to do. So if I'm going somewhere that I've never been, you know, like I went to Cambodia for the first time for work. We shot a commercial there. And I said, I only have 1 day. What should I do? And I got like a really good curated list of recommendations. Because there's so much out there. It's like such information overload. So really like compressing that time helps.
I'm going to do that. Great tips.
I feel like when we've talked about this off the podcast before, but I think that when you work in the travel space, and this is kind of like a niche problem, air quotes there, it's hard to like turn off that mindset of like, I need to like be paying attention and I need to be like looking at all the suitcases in the airport and I need to be like seeing what everyone's doing. And for us, it's like, okay, you're at a restaurant, but I need to like be looking at how everyone's like interacting with their food and like talking to each other. And like, this could be a story later, or like, this could be something that I need to know and be observant about. Do you ever feel like you need to like turn that part of your brain off? Or is it always just that eye for what people are doing with their bags and all that kind of stuff on the road is always on?
It's always on, but I don't think I see it as work necessarily. I think I see it more as like, I love people watching, and I'm really fortunate that kind of weird, creepy side of me just like pays back in dividends, because it's actual real insights on how people travel, how people interact. And I think all of us are really lucky that it can turn into work. I mean, I don't think I ever set out being like, okay, I'm going to go to the airport early and just like observe these things. But you get most of your inspiration and most of your aha moments just from things happening around you. So, you know, I don't think like I go out of my way to see what happens. But you see some like crazy stuff when you're traveling, or just like people who, I don't know how, no matter what, I always end up behind someone who's like literally never gone through security before. And it's just interesting to see their perspective. So I mean, all of those things that they're not necessarily things I like take back to the team and are like, we have to work on this. But it's really good insight for problems we do want to solve down the line.
And when you're talking about aha moments, you guys have had so many like really interesting and out of the box collaborations. I think like the NBA suitcase that felt like a basketball was probably the one I loved the most because it was so unexpected. You know, where do those connections come from, and how do you guys kind of ideate these collabs that I feel like are not what you would expect from a luggage brand?
So one thing I noticed when we were looking at not even just luggage brands, but travel in general, is I discovered this weird little travel bubble, and I'm sure you guys can speak to this more than I do, but it's like just travel writers and travel bloggers and travel editors and like the points guy and and like all of these things, that this like this community of like very intense travelers. And I think a lot of the marketing around luggage and all of that stuff really revolved around making that community happy. But then it was like very insular, like they all just talk to each other. And I think for us, we just took such a wide approach to it. We're like, when you go to the airport, the amount of people like reading these forums or like reading these very specific things is a lot smaller than the people that we're trying to go after, who are just, you know, going on trips for work, for play, for bachelorette parties, for weddings, whatever. And we took a really different approach to marketing. I think for us, it was more about like the storytelling of travel, but realizing there's so many different types of travel and so many different types of travelers. I think at its core, travelers today have like the same needs in terms of functionality, but the way we approach collaborations is like, you know, there's different groups of people and different audiences that we're trying to reach, and we kind of look at different verticals and we're like, okay, in this vertical, who's like an amazing person or an amazing brand that people love and people follow, and how do we tie that back to travel? And I think that's allowed us to come up with some really exciting collaborations, like the NBA, which you mentioned. There's actually like a huge like cohort of people who travel for games and like follow their teams, and also just people who like both travel and the NBA. Like, it's like a Venn diagram.
And just like basketball.
Yeah. And then also we launched it during a weekend where everyone is traveling to LA for the All-Star game. So I think travel's a nice like thread that ties everything together. And when we look at collaborations, we look at reaching the people who are kind of committed to the people we're collaborating with. And it gives us a lot of different perspectives. Like, I think someone said to me, it's really crazy, you guys are one of the only brands who could collaborate with the NBA and the Minions and Star Wars and Carly Kloss, like all in one year. It's just, but without it feeling crazy, it's because all of those we can tie back to travel somehow and reach a new audience. And it's like a really exciting way to just get new products out the door.
Do you have a favorite?
I mean, they're all,
they're, you know, like children.
Like,
you can't say, yeah,
which your favorite kid is, which my mom's is definitely not me. So I think the last one that we do is always my favorite. We just launched one with Dwayne Wade, which is exciting because I think, you know, obviously people think of him as a basketball player, but he has so much going on and he travels so much. I mean, he is on a plane like every day, and we really took that lifestyle angle to it and got to make some really elevated products, which is exciting. And we have another drop of his products coming out soon. For me, collaborations are really fun because we get to test like new silhouettes and new styles and see how they do. And we did some really cool stuff for Dwayne's next drop.
This question like ties back to an earlier conversation, but I meant to ask it before. You might not be able to remember. I only ask because I can remember mine. What was your first suitcase?
My first suitcase. It was actually this DVF rolling duffel, and I thought it was so chic. And it was. I think I got it because I had an internship like out of state, so I had to get my first suitcase, and I think I went to like some discount store to buy it, and it was so impractical. It was like a duffel bag that had snaps on the sides, but it also had wheels, but the way I packed it would always tip over. It couldn't stand up. But I remember that was the first time I bought a suitcase. Before that, I had, you know, just like whatever was laying around my parents' house. But it's so crazy that I never, like, for me, that was a big purchase. And I think I still have it, actually. What was yours?
Well, it was bought for me by my parents. And I was about 6. And it was a little Hello Kitty wheelie duffel thing. It was very small.
Oh, that's so cute. But I always see kids. Like I don't remember what I had when I was younger. I think my parents just, like, carried stuff for me.
I just, like... I'm just imagining them with, like, armfuls of possessions. like a sack.
My tiny little clothes just in the pouch somewhere.
I feel like... So I still have my first suitcase, and it's not the, like, brown and blue JanSport bags that I still have. They just are, like, stuffed underneath my bed. But I had a Vera Bradley Paisley very, very small quilted duffel that had like a matching dop kit that both had my initials on them.
Did you have
everything was monogrammed?
Did you have the matching straightener cover, like the flat iron cover?
Uh-huh. Yes, I did.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
In fact, I did.
but it's amazing because I have to straighten my hair and then put it in my bag.
So obviously it needs to go in a cloth cover.
It's so user-friendly.
Heated object. No yeah, it was not super logical. But yeah, I still have it. It's been...
I have a lot of sorority sisters.
Oh, yeah. The straps have been repaired twice. It's like a two-dayer. Like, you cannot pack, like, anything unless you have child-sized clothes.
And you have to fit your straighteners in it.
No, it took up so much space.
But it's just really crazy, like, all these stories. Yeah. People travel so much with these things that are not actually functional. And, like, we're huge on that functionality. So I'm trying to find the kind of marriage between... I mean, obviously, everyone says, like, form and function, but real fashion and function, because I have so many amazing handbags that I've, quote-unquote, invested in. And then, you know, they're beautiful, and you open it, and it's, like, just a pit. There's no interior pockets. There's, like, it's totally useless. Like, it's, like, all slouchy. But anything that's functional ends up being, like, super technical or, like, very sporty. And I think what we're trying to do with our products is, like, get all of the functionality in but still make a really beautiful bag, which we're excited to be doing with, like, all of our new soft goods that we've launched this year.
The only reason why I so clearly remember my Hello Kitty bag is because at Heathrow Security, when we were, like, off on a family holiday, we, like, you know, went through everything. And then me and my dad were, like, getting sandwiches in some, like, duty-free cafe. And suddenly there was an announcement saying a Hello Kitty bag had been left at security. And we had to, like, bolt back to get it and then bolt to the plane, board. And then we sat down, we realized we hadn't paid for our sandwiches.
Oh, no.
We just robbed the place.
Some stolen sandwiches and Hello Kitty bag. Yeah.
It's a middle-aged man, his 8-year-old child.
Running through the airport with Hello Kitty and stolen sandwiches. Yeah.
It was the 90s. It
was a different time, for sure. Yeah.
Well, Jen, thank you so much for joining us. I know people probably want to keep up with your travels because you're on the road so often. So where can people find you on social media?
I'm at Jennifer on Instagram, and Away is at Away. So
what an Instagram handle. Can we just talk about that? At what point did you, like, steal for everyone else at Jennifer?
I'm also at Jennifer on Twitter, which I was just very early there. Like, that's just me being an early adopter. But I did use that as leverage to get at Jennifer on Instagram. I remember emailing them. I mean, this was also years and years ago, but I was like, I'm at Jennifer on Twitter and this account is inactive.
So I would like to take control. Amazing. Well, you can find a bunch of stories and keep up with what Away is doing on cntraveler.com. Lale, where can people find you? Lale, we didn't record last week because Lale was hopping around Los Angeles and San Francisco for her birthday.
And Big Sur.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
It's great.
You can, check out.
And as listeners know, I can't drive. I was driven along the Pacific Coast Highway.
Most beautiful birthday present.
Is it open again?
Yes. It was like amazing. The second day it was open, and it was absolutely incredible. It was amazing.
But you can check out her Big Little Lies moments and everything at
Lale Hannah on Instagram.
And I'm at Oh Hey There Mayor. Lale and I are planning podcasts for the rest of the year. And if you have any ideas or people you want us to talk to or things you want to hear, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you guys. See you soon.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.